Okay, so the lecture today is on gender and writing in George Sand, and also more specifically, of course, in Indiana. So, obviously, here is our George Sand. So, under the guise of La Vieille Dame de Nohant, the old lady of Nohant, and here her gender is quite a comforting one. It's the old granny, but as we'll see, yes. Okay. So, but as we'll see, George Sand's gender is going to be rather problematic and was problematic at the time. So first, maybe we should just talk about gender and romanticism. So as you know, after the revolution and the empire, it became clear that the old order could not be restored. And the romantics started, instead of just like dreaming about the past and the ruins of the Ancien Régime, they started dreaming of a new society. And this led to rethinking the position of women within that society. In Romantic literature, woman plays the role of a guide. So this is one typical role of women in Romantic literature, but she's also idolized. So though there were Enlightenment intellectuals such as, I've mentioned here, Olympe de Gouges, who wrote, you're all aware of, the Déclaration des droits de l'homme et du citoyen, so one of the key texts of the French Revolution, well, she decided she would write her own version, which is La Déclaration des droits de la femme et de la citoyenne in 1791. So we didn't need to wait for the 19th century to think about women issues and feminism. We already have people in the Enlightenment thinking about this. And so these people were calling for a new place for women within society. And in the 19th century, people start seeing this call becomes increasingly insistent and sometimes leads to the emergence of feminist thought. So more and more, we are moving to a social explanation instead of a natural one to explain women's role. So what does this mean, this nature versus society debate? This means that woman's role is no longer seen as fixed and determined by the laws of nature, i.e. women are smaller, they have a smaller head, so that must mean they have a smaller brain. This sort of idea that women naturally are weaker beings than men. But instead we're trying to think of women within this idea that their role within society is not natural, but it's just basically it's been defined by society itself. And society, unlike nature, is not fixed. Society evolves, which means that if society evolves, the position of women within that society is also going to evolve. Now, this is interesting when we think of the 19th century, which is really a whole century when society just keeps evolving. So one of the dominant ideas was that society would be regenerated through women and the working classes. And these were two groups which had been previously denied any political power and had been simply pushed aside. Sonder would echo this idea of the necessity to rehabilitate those groups which society had previously oppressed. In Indiana, George Sand makes this connection between women and the oppressed, and in this case, and these women, you know, women belonging to the upper class, well, George Sand is representing them as slaves. So even though they are in the highest spheres of society, they are still slaves. And this theme of slavery is a classic romantic theme, so the romantics were quite attracted to this, the figure, the character of the slave. But we can also understand that slavery was just also a hot debate at the time. It was a contemporary topic. So in the first half of the 19th century, African colonies were being developed, and slavery, though it had been officially abolished in 1815, was still very much practiced. And it's interesting to see how many women wrote against slavery and associated in a way to the condition of women. So just to go back to Olympe de Gouges, who I must admit is a favourite of mine, she, not only was she criticising quite vigorously against the position of women within her own society and demanding that women should have more rights, she was also quite vigorously defending the rights of those who were slaves. She was very much on the on the side of abolition. And in a way, the two, slavery and female condition, she brought them together, and it made sense for her. And Sand is going to perpetuate this idea. Now, Sand never actually directly wrote about slavery, but it is a continuous, though subtle, thread running through her work. And in Indiana, slavery is used as a metaphor to talk about any type of oppression. So here we have a quote: Dieu ne veut pas qu'on opprime et qu'on écrase les créatures de ses mains. S'il daignait descendre jusqu'à intervenir dans nos chétifs intérêts, il briserait le fort et relèverait le faible. Il passerait sa grande main sur nos têtes inégales et les nivellerait comme les eaux de la mer. Il dirait à l'esclave, jette ta chaîne et fuis sur les monts où j'ai mis pour toi des eaux, des fleurs et du soleil. Now, in this passage is interesting because, yes, okay, you have the word slave, but the word slave is not really here quite a very determined word. It could apply just as well to the slaves who are working for the French on the Île Bourbon, as for Indiana herself, who is herself going to flee and to live in those mountains on the Île Bourbon in this very natural landscape. So here the slave can be applied to various things here. So in Indiana, slavery is the metaphor to talk of the oppression of women, and in particular with the couple wife, slave, and husband, master. And indeed, when Delmar beats her, she submits to his blows, though her spirit refuses to bend. She very much sees herself as a slave to her husband, and because she is a slave, society has made her a slave. She just has to, you know, take the blows and accept them. Though her mind and her spirit, it's not her spirit who is yielding to the blows. It's basically she is forced by society to accept her husband's punishment. So as I said in the passage quoted here, so it's not just the slave, it's Indiana herself who will indeed flee to the mountains of the island and live in this paradise-like nature. As a créole, do you all understand the term créole? Do you know what a créole is? No? Can someone who knows explain what créole means? I saw you doing this when I asked, did you know, and then now you're just looking at your
is it,
paper.
Is it like the language spoken by French people in French colonies who aren't from France, but it's kind of a mixture of a native language and French. I think they call it pidgin French as well, or something like that. And it's just the way that I think people on the plantation used to communicate in a certain way so that the masters can understand exactly what they were saying.
Okay, so you're right in the idea that Creole now, or we talk more of it in terms of the language, and Creole is still very much quite a vibrant dialect in places like Martinique or Guadeloupe or La Réunion. But originally, a Creole is for a person. And when you're a French person, you're European, you've decided to emigrate to one of those islands, you go to the Île Bourbon, you're going to set up your plantation, and you're one of those European families who have set up their plantation and basically live on the isle. So it's a way to differentiate themselves from the slaves. Obviously, they're not slaves, they're Creole, but they've also left France. So, for example, you've all heard of Napoleon Bonaparte. I hope you've also all heard of his first wife, Joséphine. Okay? So Joséphine, she came from the Martinique, and she was a Creole, and she spoke with this sort of languid Creole language accent, which Napoleon found, and the rest of the Paris circle found irresistible. So Joséphine was a Creole, so she's not black, she's not, she's definitely of a French descent, but she is Creole because she comes from one of those families who settled to develop their own plantations. Okay. So as a Creole, the connection between Indiana and slaves is not a forced one. As a child, Indiana lived among slaves towards whom she was already very compassionate. So even as a child, Indiana feels sympathy for the slaves. So we have here, élevé au désert. Sorry, there should be accent aigu on the first E of désert. Négligé de son père, vivant au milieu des esclaves, pour qui elle n'avait d'autre secours, d'autre consolation que sa compassion et ses larmes, elle s'était habituée à dire « Un jour viendra où tout sera changé dans ma vie ». So her life having indeed changed, Indiana will be able, with Ralph by her side, to do more than just shed tears on behalf of the slaves. No longer a slave herself to her husband, she will now be able to pursue her fight against oppression by buying back slaves, giving their freedom back, and instead of being their masters, being their friends. And this is the quote. La majeure portion de nos revenus est consacrée à racheter de pauvres noirs infirmes. C'est la principale cause du mal que les colons disent de nous. Que ne sommes-nous assez riches pour délivrer tous ceux qui vivent dans l'esclavage? Nos serviteurs sont nos amis. Ils partagent nos joies. Nous soignons leurs maux. So, this theme of slavery obviously can be explained because of Indiana's origins. But what I want to show you is that George Sand is doing more with this theme. She's connected, it's her way of talking of female oppression. Woman in the 19th century is also a slave. Another idea expressed in the 19th century was that society would be regenerated through the symbiosis of man and woman. In Indiana, this symbiosis is reached at the level of the individual through Ralph and Indiana instead of that of society, but at least it leads to personal happiness. In a way, the type of relationship man and woman between Ralph and Indiana is going to be set as a model. It's for us to follow that model. The feminist circles of the time were attracted to George Sand because she was an independent woman, she was an author making a living from her work. She also dressed up as a man. I'll show you some various caricatures of her which will show you how controversial she was. But Sand did not fully embrace these feminist movements. In 1848, the feminist newspaper La Voix des Femmes put George Sand's name up as a candidate for the elections of the Assemblée Constituante. Normally, women do not have political power. This is unheard of. So the fact that George Sand's name has been put up as a candidate comes a bit as a surprise. But very quickly, George Sand publicly denies this candidacy and explains that her name has been put up without her consent. And she says, Je ne puis permettre que sans mon aveu, on me prenne pour enseigne d'un cénacle féministe avec lequel je n'ai jamais eu la moindre relation, agréable ou fâcheuse. Now, when Jean Chassin is saying this, she's not being completely truthful. She did have relations, she was in contact with feminists. She just didn't want to really become a fully part of those feminist movements. So, if Georges Sand is dissociating herself from these feminist movements, what exactly then was her position regarding women's place within society? Georges Sand believed that women were not able to take part in politics, but that was not because of their natural constitution. This was because the education they had received was too weak and because of the influence their husbands would have. However, this did not mean that Sand thought women were naturally unsuited to politics. Sand very much saw it as a social problem. Society made women incapable of being politically active and not their nature. So for women to gain political power, society had first to change with better education for girls and an equal relationship between spouses instead of wives being under their husband's domination. And only then, once we had once equality men between men and women has been reached, then women would be fit to take to play a political part. Okay. Okay, so now we're going to focus on the representation of gender within Indiana. Sand sees society as being sick. Society oppresses at least half of the human species, i.e. women, but this leads to the suffering of the whole of humanity, as the suffering of women leads to the unhappiness of men. Indiana, George Sand's first novel, which brought her fame, focuses on the suffering of women through matrimony. Her following novels, which are Valentine and Lilia, you don't need to know their names, I'm just telling you, will continue to explore this scene. So Indiana is not a one-off where Georges Sand is discussing the condition of women. This is a theme she'll pick up on again in her following novels. Indiana early on connects her own fate to that of all oppressed people, and in particular slaves, and this was, as we saw, a way for Sand to connect female oppression to a wider social problem. Okay. So, portrait of the traditional weak woman. What do you do with Indiana? She's a rather problematic character in this sense. So, Indiana is first presented as a physically and emotionally weak woman. She has a very slight and delicate build. In the text, she's always described as being childlike. She seems to be like, it's ambiguous about how old she is. She's always presented as being extremely young. She faints and she cries. She suffers from a mysterious illness and needs to receive regular care. So here, from the very beginning, Indiana is presented as a typical weak woman. Now, Indiana's sickness, by being in a state of weakness which calls for external strength, is a convenient reason to explain Ralph's intimate proximity to Indiana. So her sickness actually is a convenient, in a way, plot device to explain why Ralph can actually go into her bedroom. So their intimacy is this sort of intimacy is without the suspicion that there's anything sexual in this. It's the intimacy between the patient and the doctor and not that of the lovers. We are told in the novel that Ralph has a solid knowledge of medicine, though we are given no information as to how this skill has been acquired. And as we saw last week, the sickness of the body is a way to talk of the sickness of the soul. And Ralph heals Indiana through his love rather than through drugs and diets. So Ralph will indeed be Indiana's doctor, but let's say not through the traditional way. Now, despite being ill, So we see that, okay, that we can explain the why Indiana is sick. It helps to bring together Indiana and Ralph. But at the end of the day, it's also showing us the portrait of a weak woman. Now, despite being ill, in moments of crises, Indiana is not afraid to take decisions and act. She's described as being incredibly intrepid and fearless when hunting. And if you remember, there's this hunting scene. She's on horseback, so she's like, you know, quite as good a rider as, you know, the rest of the men. And Raymond, who is already interested in her, is actually frightened by her at this stage. He prefers the weak Indiana who needs to be taken care of. This strong, powerful woman on horseback directing and controlling her horse, this is scaring him. So when the heart is involved, she is brave enough also to defy society, whereas Raymond, on the other side, refuses to step outside the rules of a society made for and by men. From her childhood, she develops a skill to fight repression, and her mind and soul never submits to it. So in a way, we have the sickness of Indiana is convenient. As I said, it's convenient for plot reasons. But in a way, it also accentuates her strength. All of a sudden, you know, we're presented with a woman who is physically weak, but yet mentally, she is capable of great strength. And there are also other cases. All of a sudden, you know, we are shocked as readers to see that this weak woman is capable of such strength. So there is this strength in her, but it's been smothered by society, but every now and then it comes up. So we need to question this traditional portrait of the weak woman. It doesn't quite apply to Indiana. We also need to question Delmar as the portrait of the traditional male brute. Can we really just reduce Delmar to this? Now, Delmar is a male archetype. He is physically strong, he resorts to violence, and he scrupulously obeys the law. But Indiana is not the only one to suffer. Delmar is also deeply unhappy. He longs to show his attachment to his wife, to come into contact with her, but he is trapped in his traditional husband role. So he's blocked in a situation where he feels he has to play the role of the master. And it's a role to which Indiana automatically resists. This role is not going to bring him any love from Indiana. So Delmar is not just men are not necessarily benefiting from this patriarchal society. Women's unhappiness is going to also bring suffering for these men. And Delmar is a good example. Portrait of the new man. Obviously, here we'll be talking of Raymond. Alors, also what I want to say is that romanticism is quite interesting, actually is even more interesting when talking about male identity. There's this idea of gender, but in terms of masculinity, what being a man means. Because the problem, romanticism is not going to put forward, you know, that a strong, powerful man. On the contrary, man is going to be shown in his weaknesses, and in a way, Raymond sort of fits this. So Raymond represents the new model of masculinity. He is more subtle and refined. He presents himself as a man of feeling. So here again, we have a man who cries and who swoons. Now, I don't know how often these are like men in this classroom have cried and swooned. I hope not very often. But this idea, this representation of masculinity today, it doesn't actually correspond to ours. It's a more fragile type of masculinity. Now, love is but a game. It's a pleasant distraction from more serious matters, such as making money, politics, and being conceived as an important man within society. He sees women as game to be hunted, but only feels contempt for women once the chase is over. Now, are you aware of an 18th century novel called Les Liaisons Dangereuses? Okay. How would you translate? How is it translated in English? Dangerous connections or Les Liaisons Dangereuses? You just keep it that way. Well, there you go. So, if you've read the book or if you've seen the film, you have this male character who just really enjoys. He's not really so much interested in the women themselves. He's interested in getting them, and once they've been got, there's no interest. And we've seen already that Georges Sand is using references. For example, we saw Paul et Virginie by Bernardin de Saint-Pierre, the figure of Valmont. I'll write Valmont down. Valmont, who is the main male character in Les Liaisons Dangereuses, he is going to sort of, in a way, be one of Raymond's ancestors, if I can say so. So, as I said, love is a social game. The higher the social status of the woman conquered, the better. Now, it is because of her social background that Noun is so quickly sacrificed. There is no glory for Raymond in seducing a simple chambermaid. He tries to use sex as a way to dominate Indiana, to assert his authority over women. And he always does this in an aggressive way. But it is because sex is not associated with love, but with male oppression, that Indiana refuses to yield. And we can see that the intimate relationship between Indiana and Raymond, and then between Indiana and Ralph, and the sort of bodily contact is very different. There's no sense of Indiana yielding to Ralph, whereas Raymond is always forcing Indiana into giving something she does not want, because he doesn't really want to have sex with Indiana. He just wants to force her. So Indiana and Delmar's marriage, in terms of personal happiness, is very clearly a disaster. The roles of husband and wife are synonymous with those of master and slave. And Raymond's marriage to Laure de Nangis, so at the end of the day he decides finally to marry Laure de Nangis instead of pursuing his relationship with Indiana. So his marriage to Laure is socially considered as a very successful one. Laure combines the prestige of the old aristocracy with the wealth of the high bourgeoisie. But Laure is fully aware that no love is involved in this. She knows that Raymond has asked her to become his wife, not for any love reasons. It's basically only this idea of climbing up the social ladder. She is willing to sacrifice personal happiness for social success. So what are the way out Georges Sand is offering for us? There are not many, to be honest, but we can mention two. Surprisingly, one form of female emancipation proposed in Indiana, and which will be echoed in Sand's two other novels again, Valentine and Lelia, if you're interested in reading them, is religion. So we've seen already in Romanticism the importance of religion, Chateaubriand also rethinking religion, and Sand is going to do the same. But I'm here talking of religion, and definitely not religion within an official institution. Indiana's God is a very personal one. He is a benevolent God, guiding her towards goodness, and thus towards her own happiness. It is not the God of the Catholic Church, which reinforces patriarchal rule through the use of fear. And what is also interesting with this is that Georges Sand, when she was little, had her own idea of what God was. I think she gave him a name, she gave it a name, but also, more interestingly, that her God could be either man or woman. She did not actually give a gender to God. She was very comfortable with God, you know, embracing both genders, whereas in all our representations of God now, it's always as a male figure. He's the father. Okay. Georges Sand, as a little girl, just couldn't that wasn't her idea of what God should be like. And in a way, we can see Indiana sharing this sort of idea. So, more importantly, and maybe, so religion is one way, but at the end of the day, it's only going to take female emancipation so far. More importantly, and maybe just as surprising, is that Indiana gains her emancipation and happiness through a man, Ralph. Now, the bond between Indiana and Ralph is not the unequal bond of matrimony, however. It is the bond of love which both characters share and feel with equal intensity. So here we go back to this idea of regenerating society through this perfect symbiosis between man and woman, and this is accomplished in Ralph and Indiana. Okay. So first, I found a few illustrations of Indiana, and I was wondering if you'd be able to place them in the novel. Do you have an idea of where this illustration comes? What is it illustrating?
That the
Sorry?
At the waterfall on the island.
Exactly. So also when you have this idea of les eaux, les fleurs, le soleil, etc., and the quote I gave you, it's very much here. So this is the most dramatic moment in the whole of the book. But we must be careful between... Obviously, Josh Somme did not do her own illustrations. In a way, this illustration does not quite... sort of jars with the general message of the book. Why? What are the gender stereotypes here we find in this illustration?
There's the weak man, the weak woman, and the strong man. It's not a symbiotic relationship that's being portrayed there.
Exactly. So here you have the very linear, strong, he's quite solid, rough, he's his own two legs, whereas poor Indiana, I don't know what she's doing, she's flopping around all over the place. But we just don't get that. So in a way, the illustrations, there's this discrepancy between what the book is saying and yet also the illustrations which were provided at the time, because maybe they just didn't know how to represent this idea with a new idea of what femininity means or masculinity means. We're far from the, Ralph is not a very strong man either. He's also depressive. They've both been seriously wounded by society. I can't, So there's one problem here. So here, this is a drawing of representing Georges Sand. So here, Georges Sand very strikingly smoking her pipe. So this was something which, if you were a woman, you weren't really supposed to do. This was a bit taboo. You were ashamed that you might be a woman of loose character if you were smoking a pipe. Okay. And maybe I should try... Okay. I'll continue with writing, and then we'll look at other pictures. So, gendered writing. Now, Aurore du Devant, as you remember, writes under a male pseudonym, and the narrator, when intervening in the story, takes on a masculine identity. It's maybe something you haven't picked up, but the narrator is very much writing as a man. It's not a woman. It's not a woman's perspective on the story. It's very much a man. It's very subtle, but it's still a masculine identity. So by taking on a male voice, Georges Sand was able to be more radical in her attack against society. She was able to talk about politics. Politics normally was seen as a subject which women would not be able to talk about, were not suited to talk about. Politics simply did not belong to the female sphere. It also meant that she could be more audacious in her description of man and woman relationships. So that means that she could, there was this idea that it was indecent of a woman to talk of intimate sexual relationships, whereas for a man it was acceptable. So by writing as Georges Sand instead as Aurore du Devant, she had actually more scope as a writer. She could talk about politics, and she could also talk of man and woman relationships in more detail. So in other novels, she was criticised for some of these features when it was common knowledge that Georges Sand was a woman, because at this time everyone thought that Georges Sand was a man. And as I said, Georges Sand frequented feminist circles, but as we've seen before, they were in disagreement. And in 1837, did I put this in? Okay, I'll translate it for you. So this is my mistake. So in 1837, you have a famous feminist who is called Flora Tristan. She's one of the major figures of 19th century feminism, and she criticised Georges Sand for denouncing the condition of women under the protection of a man's name. She thought that was dishonest and in a way was not really helping, you know, this idea that women should find their own voice within society. But as we said, we can understand why Georges Sand decided to do so, because it gave him more scope. And also, if the book isn't published, well, there's no way of getting the message across. So the novel was a huge success, but the ending was criticised for being psychologically incoherent. So Ralph's character is metamorphosed from the brutish egoist to the sensitive man, and also Indiana recovers from all her trials when she's, in a way, we're all expecting her to die. The critics felt that a novel on the miseries of women's condition should not lead to such a happy ending. This was simply not realistic. There are also problems with the moral message of the novel. The virtuous characters, Indiana and Ralph, are rewarded. The problem is that their virtue goes against social values. Well, yes, Indiana has abandoned her dying husband to meet another man. This is a huge social taboo. Ralph is in favour of suicide, okay? In the 18th century, if someone had committed suicide, what you would do is that you'd still, like, hang the body of the suicide because it was illegal. So suicide cannot be seen as something, as a value you could defend. We're touching another taboo. And Ralph is also in favour of a free union between man and woman. He does not think that only marriage can sanction this union. So the idea of virtue is here ambiguous if we put it back into its social perspective. Now, Sand opposed to realism what she called idealism. She did not want to paint man as she saw him, but as she wanted him to be. Je crois que l'art, cet art spécial du récit, ne vaut que par l'opposition des caractères. Mais dans leur lutte, je veux voir triompher le bien, que les faits écrasent l'honnête homme, j'y consens. Mais qu'il n'en soit pas souillé ni amoindri, et qu'il aille au bûcher en sentant qu'il est plus heureux que ses bourreaux. So, what Sand is doing here, she's not obviously she says that the 19th century society is sick. What she's doing is not just, she's not wanting to just represent a sick society. She wants to offer an alternative. This is how things could be, and this is where we go into this idea of idealism. So it is in this tension that between realism and idealism that Sand introduces an ethical dimension to aesthetics. La réalité n'est pas la vérité. Il y a là une grande distinction à faire. La réalité, c'est le spectacle des choses matérielles. C'est changeant, mobile, transitoire, transformable, éphémère comme elle. Ce n'est donc pas la vérité. La vérité est immuable. Éternel. C'est quelque chose d'abstrait et d'éternellement pur et beau comme Dieu, car c'est Dieu même. Et la réalité passe comme les ombres, comme les nuages, comme les phases de l'humanité dont elle est la manifestation. Il est de tristes époques où la vérité n'est pour ainsi dire pas dans ce monde. Du moins, elle n'y règne pas. Elle n'est pas réfugiée. Elle n'est réfugiée que dans quelques âmes d'élite qui seules la prouvent par leur propre existence et leur foi invincible. Pardon. So, Sander uses realism for her portrayal of politics, of society, of human relationships, and she uses realism to condemn all of these, to show that actually this is why society is sick. But Ratha and Indiana escape from this. They remain unblemished despite all the suffering. Sander needs to write an idealist ending to introduce her moral message to the novel. This is how things are, but this is how they should and can be. It is interesting that even in this, her writing was seen as gendered. Realism was perceived as virile. A man has the courage to face up to the tough realities of the world, whereas idealism was seen as women's writing, a prettified version. Okay. So, what I'm going to do now is talk a bit about the illustrations I found. So here again, can anyone, you know, sort of place this illustration from the book?
So when she's waiting for the ship to take back to home.
Yeah. So this is the moment when she's supposed to go back to France to meet Simon. She's left her husband. She's fleeing from her husband like a slave. She's running away. Okay, and this is what the illustration is very much picking up on, is this the romantic portrayal of, here again you remember the idea of the sublime and romanticism, the rocks, etc., the rather improbable sort of, you know, landscape. And this is very much in a way part of this romantic tradition of the sublime. You have obviously the rock, she's even worse than sitting down, she's lying down. And it's very much with this, the exotic of the Ilibor war with this strange plant here, which seems to come out from an engraving from an encyclopedia of exotic plants, is that really one of the big stresses here is the idea of the exotic and picking up on and developing, you know, like the Bernardin de Saint-Pierre Paul and Virginie reference. Okay. And now this is another a caricature here again of Georges Sand. Now, what strikes you here? What do you think of this caricature? Let's say it was a caricature of one of you ladies. What would you think? Would you be flattered or would you be upset?
It's not very flattering. She's dressed in the mouth, but also it's quite androgynous. It doesn't really look like either. It's quite bizarre.
It is. It's completely bizarre. So she's given. So yes, she obviously did dress up as a man, but her female shape is really accentuated, like her thighs seem to, you know, she very much has women's thighs, and it just doesn't look right in the trousers. So it's this idea that, in a way, you know, she's bad, she's like, she's in a way, it just doesn't fit, okay? So she's not this gender, this playing with male gender, when actually she's a woman, just, there's something ridiculous. It's not, this is not how things should be. So, as you said, it is not a very flattering representation of Georges Sand. And you have, I think it's député, je sais pas, campagne de maire, etc. So it's also making fun of this idea of women in politics, of the role she was hoping to have, she was thinking of having in politics. She's very much here, it's something a bit satirical here about her role. Okay, so do you have any questions concerning this lecture? Is everything clear?
Can I just ask what is it in the book that you can tell that
It's very subtle. I haven't actually picked down the exact passages. I have to, you know, it's that every now and then, it's like when she, for example, comments on the situation. It's not like I, the narrator, you know, when I go down to the pub, that sort of thing. It's very much, in a way, the narrator is showing as if he's taking sides. This is how men act, as I well know, this sort of thing. It's extremely subtle. There's
if
no.
If I were to say that in an essay, for example, would I be allowed to just say that? Just away,
ideally, you'd find an example because it's obviously something we all agree on and has been said in the lecture. You're not saying anything which I don't know. So you know, but obviously, if you can illustrate it, if you can find a reference to it, that would be good.
I generally
there is no sense that it is a woman writing. Actually, the readers were all called at this time. They still, Jocelyn was not yet a public figure. The book made her a public figure, but they all thought that it was a man writing its own book.
I don't really understand about Noon in the novel. She's a bit confusing to me. Like her background or really anything about her, because I understand the other characters, but I don't really understand.
So Noonan is, in a way, she's a sort of like she's the female companion of Indiana. And I think they're also like Milk. I don't know if Seldoli, I think they were Indiana. It was normal for women at this time not to breastfeed their own children. You'd have a nurse who would breastfeed, and usually that nurse obviously would have her own child because that's the only way you could breastfeed. You can't breastfeed if you don't have children. So you'd have the child of the nurse and this child of this, you know, upper class woman who are going to, in a way, suckle the breasts of the same woman. In a way, they become this idea that they become, there's a sort of brotherhood or sisterhood which is formed in that way. So even though Luna is very much a servant, she has a special relationship with Indiana because there's a special bond between them. There's also a very striking, I'll go and think into this. So Luna follows Indiana, so she's a servant, but it's also, there's this sort of confusion. She's servant, but at the same time friend. And because Noon, there's also this idea, so Noon comes from the island, etc., and there's this, the fact that she's exotic is very much stressed, so she wears the madras, which is a special weave, cotton cloth, etc., she puts up her hair in a certain style, and this attracts Raymond. So what happens is that first, Raymond is going to have an affair with Noon, and Noon is a simple girl, you know, she's genuinely in love with Raymond, and she's going to try to please him as much as she can, and she ends up realising that actually Raymond now that he's had Noon, he's moving on to something else, he's interested in Indian art. So the problem is that by then, Noon is expecting Raymond's child, and so the problem of like being an unmarried woman, having an illegitimate child, etc., this drives her to commit suicide. Now she does not willfully commit suicide because here again suicide is a bit taboo. It's this idea that her condition, her state, leads her to distraction and she loses her footing or something. So Noon is very much an Ophelia-like figure. And Indiana does not actually at first realise that this past relationship between Moon and Raymond, because obviously Raymond does not want her to know, this would be terrible. It's like, you know, if your boyfriend actually had dated your sister, you know, this is one of those things, it's as bad as that, she's impossible for her. But Indiana is going to more or less going to discover the truth, because I think there's this episode when she shows Moon's hair. You know, in the 19th century, you know, hair was very much, you'd keep a lock of hair of someone, you'd even like do embroidery with someone's hair, this sort of thing. So the hair of a dead person would be like a memento. And mentioned is the references to Hamlet, to Shakespeare, with Ophelia. Woman is the first Ophelia-like figure of the novel. Okay.
So you said that she was a Creole, so that means that she was a French woman.
No, she's not. She's no, she's not a French. She's not a French. I think she's definitely a slave. She's probably you know, one of the, you know, the servants of the house. You know the daughter, as I said, was the nurse. So I don't. She wasn't. You know, her mother was probably not working in the fields or anything. But so she's a bit above this slave condition. But no, she is not. I think her hair is a bit more. You know, she's. You know, she's ethnically. I think she's from Africa. Okay. I also must remind you that on week 5, you need to hand me back your first formative assessment. Okay. So this is something you need to check on the module webpage. Okay? As a formative assessment, it's going to be short. It's only going to be on a bit on EDML, wasn't it? So obviously two texts you've been working on. And you have a choice between a commentary and an essay. You don't have to choose both, it's one or the other. So if you have problems finding it, let me know. But it is on the module webpage. The commentary is actually a Word document which you need to click on to see. But, yeah.
So is it we have that essay and then we have the exam in the summer, or do we have lots of these essays? Because on Tuesday or Monday when we had the seminar, I asked Char Miles and she didn't indicate that there was any kind of assessment coming up as in, you know, 2 weeks.
No,
time.
Because I'm the person in charge of the assessments. I'll be the person marking your assessments.
So is this the assessment?
You know, you have the form now, it doesn't count. This is just the test, just need to get feedback on to see, you know, how comfortable you are. So it is not marked. It is to be taken seriously, of course, because, you know, it's better for your feedback. But the summative essay will come in term 2. So once you've read all of the material.
So how does the assessment work exactly? The summative essay.
So you're going to be assessed, the assessment is going to be half exam, half summative.
Okay.
So that's the idea. So the summative is going to be obviously a longer essay than the formative, sorry. So that's how it works. But you should find all the details on the module.